You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't pass on the Savage Lovecast.
So we got through it. We got through the first presidential debate, Clinton v. Trump. On Monday night, last Monday night, Hofstra University. Next presidential debate coming up October 9th. But before we leave this presidential debate, last week's presidential debate in the dust, it's just something I want to talk about. I want to focus on for just a second. During the debate, toward the end of the debate, Donald Trump said this.
I was going to say something extremely rough to Hillary, to her family, and I said to myself, I can't do it. I just can't do it. It's inappropriate. It's not nice.
Before we go on, I just want to say we love you, Rosie O'Donnell. And Trump's obsession with you, Rosie O'Donnell, is evidence of some sort of mental illness. And you've borne it with such grace. And you've punched back with such force that I am full of admiration for you, Rosie O'Donnell. I know how painful this must be. But for our purposes today, we want to focus on what Trump said he didn't say about Hillary's family. It was something not nice. He didn't say what it was, but I think we all kind of knew what it might be that he was referring to. And in case anyone was confused, Trump clarified it later on Fox.
I was going to hit her with her husband's women, and I decided I shouldn't do it. I didn't feel comfortable doing it. I think I did the right thing. It's not worth a point. I didn't feel comfortable doing it with Chelsea in the room.
Trump still isn't completely clear there. He's still hinting, but we all know what the fuck he's talking about. He's talking about Bill Clinton's infidelities. And just in case anyone was unclear on the concept, I don't know if it was Patrick Bateman Trump or Ted Bundy Trump made it clear in a tweet later saying that it took courage for his father not to mention Bill Clinton's infidelity during the debate. And now there is talk about whether Trump is going to go for it. He's going to bring up Bill Clinton's infidelities during a debate. He's going to confront Hillary Clinton on the stage about her husband's infidelities because that makes sense for some reason that I don't quite understand. I am, as you may know, an advice columnist first. That's how I got my start in telling people what to do. And most people who write into advice columns, that's what they want. They want to be told what to do. But some readers write in, they explain their problems, and then they don't want to be told what to do. They want to be told what to say. They're looking for help putting something into words. And the advice columnist usually responds with suggested language, what the reader should say to the person that they're having trouble with. Hillary Clinton hasn't sent me an email seeking my advice, at least not so far as I'm aware. Maybe one of those 33,000 deleted emails was one Hillary sent to me and I didn't get to it in my inbox yet. But I pulled together some suggested language for Hillary anyway. I'm just going to pretend that Hillary wrote to me and asked me for some advice about what she should say if Donald Trump shows up to the next debate, which is an open question because Lester Holt was so mean to him and his microphone was so rigged. But if Donald Trump shows up and he attacks Hillary or attempts to attack Hillary by bringing up Bill's affair or affairs, here's what this advice columnist thinks Hillary Clinton should say.
The fact that there have been challenges in my marriage, Donald, isn't news to anyone. My husband has not always been faithful. That's true. It's also not relevant to the question before the American people. And that question is this. Which one of us, you or me, should be the next president of the United States? My husband is not running for president. I am. But if you want to talk about affairs, Donald, let's talk about affairs. Yes, my husband has not always been faithful. Again, that isn't news. It should go without saying that his actions have, at times, caused a great deal of pain for me and our daughter and for all involved. It should go without saying, but here I am saying it, Donald, because you want to talk about affairs. So let's talk about them. But first I want to say this. I love my husband. He is not perfect. My husband loves me. I am not perfect. We managed to work through the pain and save our marriage like so many other couples who have faced similar challenges, and I'm glad we're still together. Now let's talk about affairs. You've had a few yourself, Donald, and that's not news to anyone either. You've bragged about the affairs you've had. You divorced your first wife and married one of the women you cheated on her with. For your third wife's sake, Donald, I hope your cheating days are behind you, because I know how painful being cheated on is, and I wouldn't wish that pain on anyone. It really hurts. Call your first wife, Donald, and ask her how it felt. But I don't think you really wanted to talk about affairs, Donald, certainly not your own. Your intent with this obnoxious line of attack is to suggest something. A woman who's been cheated on somehow isn't fit to hold the office of the presidency. I obviously don't believe that to be true. I wouldn't be running if I did. But if you think being cheated on disqualifies someone from holding this office, Donald, what on earth are you doing in this race? Because being cheated on is bad, Donald. It hurts. But cheating is worse. A decent person apologizes for cheating, which is what my husband did. A decent person doesn't go on Howard Stern and brag about it. The American people don't expect a perfect president. There are no perfect presidents. The American people deserve a decent one.
That was Nancy Hartunian, podcast producer, standing in for Hillary Clinton, reading my suggested language. Typically, we advise columnists we don't suggest physical action when we roll out some suggested language. But I would suggest if Hillary Clinton goes with my suggested language, that she, at the end of that speech, that she pull the mic off the podium, hold it out in midair, and drop it. All right, coming up on today's show, lots of your questions, lots of my answers. And joining us for an interview and to take a couple of questions, Trey Crowder, the liberal redneck, all on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/savagelove and entering the promo code savagelove. This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage using your own computer and your own printer. For a special offer, which includes a digital scale and up to $55 worth of free postage, go to stamps.com and enter savage.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE at checkout to get 10% off. That's squarespace.com, offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. A 34-year-old lesbian in a 7.5-year relationship. And I'm having a problem being able to have spontaneous sex with my girlfriend. She has this thing where she only wants to have sex if we've taken showers recently. This was a problem a couple of years ago, and I actually broke up with her last year for a couple of months, and it was one of my biggest issues. I basically told her that, you know, I can be down with not wanting to have sex when we're dirty if we've been sweating or if she's been at work all day. But if I come home from working in my office and I want to fuck, I'm not dirty in that sense. You know, yes, maybe we smell a little, maybe it really smells like pussy way more than after you get out of the shower, but I'm certainly not dirty. You know, we've gone back and forth about it, and after we got back together, she didn't care about that. When she was trying to get me back and we did get back together, we fucked all the time, even after I came home from work. And I've asked her recently, why has that changed again? And she doesn't know. And I've told her that I'm not willing to pay the price to never be able to have spontaneous sex for the rest of my life. And like, she used to not be like this when we first got together for a couple of years. And I asked her, like maybe you should go and talk about this, like, because I feel like it's something wrong. Like, you know, you're a germaphobe about it all of a sudden. But she doesn't think anything is wrong. She thinks it's normal to not want to have sex unless the person's recently got a shower. You know, and this means anything. Like, it could just be me touching her pussy, not even me eating her out. So I'm just, like, really at a loss. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle this. You know, I can't make her change. I can't make her feel good and feel comfortable having sex with me in the evening if I hadn't got a shower since earlier that morning. But on the other hand, I don't want to live my life like that. Like, okay, now it's time to go get a shower because now we're going to have sex. Like, what if I'm just in the mood for it all of a sudden? You know, what if we're in the car? What if? I feel like there's tons of possibilities surrounding the need to not get a fucking shower before sex or the availability of no shower before sex. And it also makes me feel less sexy. It makes me feel like it's a chore or a job. I don't know. I'm just really feeling some type of way.
You can make her change. You did make her change. When you broke up with her, and the only way to get back in your good graces and win you back was to drop this shower bullshit and this shower routine, she did. She dropped it. She knocked it off. She let you eat her pussy when she'd only showered several hours earlier that day instead of immediately before, and presumably vice versa. So you know what it takes, and you have one card to play, which is to tell her this is a price of admission you were unwilling to pay, that she gets over this once and for all and permanently, and whether it's just an act of will on her part or some cognitive behavioral therapy that she needs, a few sessions, whatever it is, however she's going to get over it, she has to get over it, or you're gone, because this is that important to you. She got that last time. She could do it last time. The relationship was at stake. And you just have to tell her that this is really that important to you, that the relationship itself is at stake. Maybe that'll do the trick. It did the trick once before. Maybe it'll do the trick again. If it doesn't do the trick again, and you really are made this miserable by this routine, then you're going to have to walk. Going to the post office is so old school. It's such a hassle taking trips there. That's why over 600,000 small businesses are already using Stamps.com to get postage right from their desks wherever they need it 24 hours a day. Stamps.com turns your computer and printer into a virtual post office. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package. Stamps.com is the better way to do your mailing and shipping. It's so easy to use and really convenient, and it lets you focus your time where you want on growing your business instead of on time-consuming trips to the post office. No wonder $2.6 billion in postage was printed just last year alone using Stamps.com. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Savage, for this special offer, a 4-week trial plus $110 bonus offer, which includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com. Click the mic. Enter Savage.
Hi, Dan. 25-year-old straight male living in the Midwest. And I have a problem that I was hoping you could help me out with. How do you deal with getting friend-zoned by your girlfriend? Maybe I should back up a little bit. Me and my girlfriend have been dating for 3 years. Our relationship started off in a long-distance relationship for about 2 years. And then within the last year, she has moved to my city, gotten her job. But, you know, last few months, we've been having some issues. And through talking about it, trying to be open and honest with each other, she has kind of come to the conclusion that, you know, maybe it's that she's not romantically in love with me anymore. And, you know, she says she loves me and I believe her, but she just doesn't, might not see me like that anymore, and asked for a break and, you know, to kind of figure things out. And I'm just trying to, you know, how do I deal with this? One of the things that she's mentioned that was an issue is that me and her parents have never really, I don't want to say gotten along, because we've never had any like fighting or issues like that, but they just haven't really necessarily approved of me. I think one of the reasons is big on that is they're kind of stuck in their ways about marijuana, which I smoke, but I've always felt that they kind of held it against me. So I guess the other thing I'm asking is, if things were to work out, how do I kind of try to maybe not repair, but, you know, encourage a better relationship between me and her parents, which she has stated is something very important to her.
You've been dumped. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. You've been dumped. This isn't about her parents. This isn't about taking a break. This is about her letting you down as gently as she possibly can. So gently, in fact, that you don't realize that you've been let down, that you've been let go, that this isn't a break. It is a break up. You haven't been friend zoned. You've been dumped, broken up with, not friend zoned. So it would be a waste of time for me to, and a waste of your time, more importantly, to game out how to best approach a better relationship with your parents if you two get back together again, because you two are not getting back together again. There is a 99.999999% chance that you two are not getting back together again. She was with you for 2-3 years, regardless of how her parents felt about you. So her raising her parents' feelings at this stage, I don't think is really about her parents. It's just about her ducking and weaving, her not wanting to just be direct with you, not wanting to hurt you. It's not a malicious thing that she's done. It's a thing that a lot of people do when they're trying to end a relationship with someone that they like and someone that they care about, and they don't want to seem like they're being maliciously hurtful by just breaking up. So they gradually disentangle, or they deflect, or they throw out white lies that are misleading, that can leave somebody with false hope, which is what you've got a bad case of right now. And they think they're being nice because they're not causing a big fucking shit show all at once that has a lot of pain and tears and searing drama and cauterized wounds and all the rest of it. So they think this is the nice way to do it, by pulling the relationship band-aid off so fucking slowly. And in the end, it's not the nice way to do it, because eventually the person who's being let down gently looks back over the time that they wasted pining and hoping to get back together and realizes that that was a waste of their time, that that was never really in the cards, and that they were living in false hope. And then they feel retroactively kind of humiliated and lied to and misled. So always best to make a clean break. That said, asterisk, why do so many women engage in this kind of slow backing out of the room? Because they fear, not unreasonably, the sometimes violent reactions of their male partners. And I'm not saying to you, caller, that you're a bad dude or you would have had a violent reaction, but women are often afraid to tell men what men don't want to hear for fear of how that man in that room might react, based not on any of his prior interactions, any behaviors he's engaged in the past, but everything that she's witnessed out there in the world that's happened to women she knows, family members, her mother, her sisters, her friends, women she doesn't know, but whose stories about violent exes she's read about in newspapers or online or heard about on television. So this isn't about you, caller. Not saying that you did anything, but men have done so much to women that women who may not have anything to fear from their male partner still sometimes want to err on the side of caution when disentangling themselves from their male partners. So you've been dumped. It is over. Do not be angry now that you've realized that the band-aid was just being pulled off slowly. And do not worry about her fucking marijuana bigoted parents, because they're out of your life and they're no longer a concern. And I would, if I were you, if I were in your shoes, I wouldn't hang out with her for a while. I wouldn't see her. I wouldn't talk to her. Don't stay emotionally engaged with her, because it's just going to be more painful for you. Go to the movies. Go to the gym. Go have some pizza. Eat some ice cream. Talk to your friends. Do some journaling if you're the journaling type of guy. Go for a long bike ride, or 3 or 4 of those, and just burn through the grief. The relationship's over. Time to start looking toward your future, a future that does not most likely have this particular woman in it. Lucky for you, there are 3.5 billion other women on the planet for you to think about. This episode of Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing those savings directly on to you, the consumer. The Casper mattress provides long-lasting comfort and support, and I know this because me and my husband sleep on one every night. You can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period, so you don't have to lie down in a showroom. And Casper's mattresses uphold the highest environmental production standards, and they're made right here in the USA. Get a Casper mattress for $500 for a twin or $950 for a king-sized mattress, but you can save an additional $50 as one of our listeners by going to casper.com/savagelove and entering the promo code savagelove. That's casper.com/savagelove and promo code savagelove. Terms and conditions apply. We have a special guest joining us to help answer some of your calls today. Trey Crowder, comedian you may know from his viral video series on Facebook called Liberal Redneck. Here's a taste of Trey.
What's up, y'all? Trey Crowder, Liberal Redneck. Look, I want to talk about a lot of things, but this transgender bathroom deal just won't go away. And you know it's getting out of hand now because we got white people boycotting Target. God damn. Never thought I'd see the day. But yeah, sure enough, the American Family Association in Mississippi asked for a boycott of Target, and they got over 700,000 signatures. And I guarantee you, every one of them people so proud of themselves for making a statement, too. Y'all ever notice how shitty white people get to protest stuff by, like, going to Sears instead or eating two chicken sandwiches this week? But yeah, y'all are basically freedom riders. Guys, gets my red up, man. Apparently, the people signing this petition are doing it because they don't feel comfortable taking their kids into Target now with their trans-friendly policy. Oh, really? Y'all ain't comfortable? Yeah? Well, if you'll allow a rejoinder, so the hell what? If my great-granny was still alive, she wouldn't be comfortable eating cornbread next to a colored boy. Guess what? She'd have to get her old ass over it. Because it's 2016, and that's a shitty way to be. And why should we care if you're comfortable anyway? Have you ever even thought about the comfort of gay people, black people? Hell, me! I'm a non-Christian living in the South. I can't even go to a goddamn potluck without having to thank some space fairy for the broccoli casserole. And honey, it makes me a little uncomfortable. Have you ever cared? I'm guessing not, since Nancy Grace never had a hashtag about it.
Trey is currently touring with his writing partners on a 60-city national tour called the Well-Read Comedy Tour. They also wrote a book available now for pre-sale and being published October 4th by Simon & Schuster. Hey, Trey, how are you?
Hey, Dan, I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. You know, I've been watching your videos for a long time now and thought anybody who's that good and that smart on gun control, Donald Trump, Black Lives Matter can probably give really great sex advice, too, because sex advice, really, any idiot can do it if I'm doing it.
Well, we'll see about that. I don't know. I've been married for 5 years, but it, you know, that takes a lot out of you. My experience in that regard, I feel like I've I feel like I've lost quite a bit of the edge on that front. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, I've been married for 22-ish years, so I hope that's not how it works. If 5 years makes you incapable of giving sex advice, then I should really be lying on the floor right now and not moving.
Right.
So we've lined up a few calls for you, and we're going to play one right now.
Hi, Dan. I am calling because in about a month or so, I will be coming out to my extremely religious parents. I had two cousins that came out. One, they tried to, you know, do an exorcism on her, and the other one was cut off. Just everything was cut off. Emotional, financial, everything was cut off. Meanwhile, I am financially independent, and I've been kind of weaning myself off from speaking to my family, and so I've been kind of getting myself ready, and I think I'm ready, and I know what to expect. I know what will happen. You know, it's not going to be one of those things you see in the movies where, you know, things eventually will be okay. I know it's not going to be okay. So I guess my question will be, what do I do after? You know, should I try and continue to speak to them? Should I let them come to me? Or what is the after of this situation where things most likely don't turn out okay? Should I send them Christmas cards and hopefully get one back one day?
So growing up in middle of nowhere, Tennessee, you've probably seen this, right? Gay or lesbian or bi or trans folks from Tennessee, you know, we're from everywhere, including middle of nowheres, coming out and it not being well received, it not going over well. Have you seen that in your own social circles, your own community?
Yes, definitely. It's always really bothered me a lot. I've never been able to understand that mentality ever, but especially now, because I've got kids, you know, and I talk to my redneck guys I grew up with about, and they always bring that up. It's like, well, what if one of your boys is gay? Then what are you going to do? That kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And it always just blows my mind. Like, what do you? I don't know. I, step my parade game up, I guess. You know, what the hell you want me to say, man? Like, that's my son. Like, I seriously can't fathom being able to be affected by something like that as far as how you feel about, you know, a loved one. I don't get it. But I did. I mean, yeah, I come from a place where you say that kind of thing all the time, and it's just heartbreaking. But now, having said that, my uncle, my dad's only sibling, he's gay, and luckily he did not go through that. And I mean, I'll be honest, it's one of those things like you just didn't, like with my grandpa and stuff, he just didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But like my uncle and his partner would, they were there every Thanksgiving, every Christmas. Him and my dad were, so my dad didn't care at all. So like in my family, we didn't do that, which I was always glad for because my uncle's awesome. But I have seen that happen, unfortunately, yes. Where I'm from, it's all too common.
I think I can fathom it. And the problem a lot of people have is they may be okay with having the queer kid, but they worry that other people are going to think that they did something wrong, that they were lousy parents, that they let this happen,
right,
and encouraged it. And they're worried about how they're going to be viewed by their pastor, their coworkers, other family members, because their kid turned out queer. They screwed up their kid. They didn't raise their kid right, as if right raising is something that can prevent gayness, which
right,
just ain't so.
Yeah, no, that actually, yeah, that completely checks out. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but you're probably spot on with that. They think that it'll reflect upon them too. For whatever reason, but either way, I mean, even that though, like I just, again, logically that makes sense, but like emotionally though, I just can't imagine ever responding that way, but people definitely do. And it sucks. And it sounds like the caller is almost certainly going to run into that based off what he had said in the call about they tried to perform an exorcism on a family member that came out of the closet or something like that. So yeah, mm-hmm. Probably ain't going to go very smoothly for that guy.
Well,
unfortunately,
luckily for him, he's not financially dependent upon them. He doesn't live with them. You know, some kids come
right
out and they get thrown out, or they're, as with another family member of the callers, kid got cut off, parents, family not helping with education or helping them get, you know, find their footing in life. But he's not in a position where they can fuck him over financially, residentially, only emotionally. Can they fuck him over? And it can
right
still put a zap on your head, even if you're not dependent upon your family and parents. But his question was, what does he do? What do you do after? You know, it's not going to be okay. In this case, he thinks it won't get better. What does he do after? Does he maintain those lines of communication? Does he send those Christmas cards? Does he keep opening the door? Or does he just go silent and wait to hear from them?
I mean, I think, I don't know, it's one of those things where I sort of feel like maybe, you know, the right thing to do or whatever, if there is one, would be, you know, kill them with kindness or, you know, like, yeah, send them Christmas cards, all that stuff. Don't let them, you know, you make it evident that you are not going to stop, you know, loving them or whatever for any kind of reason like that. And that's maybe that'll, you know, make them see how ridiculous they're acting. Now, mm-hmm. Having said that, I probably wouldn't do that because I'm not gay, but I'm I'm a liberal atheist, and so I've got a lot of family members and people I grew up with, I was very close to, that are not about that at all either. And honestly, I just sort of don't have anything to do with them, to be honest with you. That's the approach that I've taken. Like, if they're not, I don't go out of my way to try to like rectify that. I'm just like, well, that's their problem, not mine. That's the way I treat it. But maybe the caller could be a bigger man than me. I don't know. You know,
your tack with those family members of yours aligns with my advice, my typical advice, my standard advice for people in the caller's position. Your only leverage over your parents, your family of origin, as an adult, is your presence. And if they can't treat you with respect, if they can't love you, don't be present. You have to be
right,
willing to use that leverage. That said, I think it is good to model the behavior you would like to see, to love them in a small way, to demonstrate to them that you aren't as small-minded and you are open in a way that they're not
right
open. To be the change you want to see in your family sometimes is a tack that you can take. That doesn't mean you have to show up to get pummeled. It doesn't mean you have to not bring your husband home for Christmas and then get, you know, Leviticus
right
thrown in your face. You don't have to put up with any of that. But occasional phone call, occasional card, letting them know that you're not the asshole here, I think that's a good strategy.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I can definitely see it both ways. Like I said, rationally, everything you just said, I agree with. But like, you know, emotionally, I know how I am and how I actually have responded. And it would probably be more, you know, with what we were saying earlier and just not have anything to do with them until they decide they want to have some sense, you know, which might never happen.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. They make it simple and intuitive to create your website, blog, or online store. You can add and arrange your content and features with the click of a mouse, and they make adding a domain to your site simple. If you sign up for a year, you'll receive a custom domain for free. And if you plan to create a website for your business, Squarespace has all the tools you need to get it up and running quickly. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE to get 10% off your first purchase.
Hi, Dan. I'm a longtime listener. I've been listening to your podcast for probably 8 or 9 years now. I've learned a lot from your sex and relationship advice. I really appreciate that. You're starting to lose me with this gun control thing. I completely agree with you that semi-automatics, that all of those mass murdering guns should be gone. I completely agree with you. But you lose me at when I hear someone has a gun, I think, fucking lunatic, I don't want my kid around. Go fuck yourself, Dan. I live in New England. My family hunts. We've done that for many, many generations. We put food in the freezer. We feed our families with the food that we procure. We're humane about it. We don't bait things. We sit in trees. We wait. We find our food. Go fuck yourself. When you get to calling us gun-fondling lunatics, go fuck yourself. All right? You need to raise the bar of compassion. You need to see past. So all I hear you talk about is people who are carrying in self-defense, self-defense, self-defense. Fine. Statistics say that's not helpful. Fine. That's not the only reason we want guns. I feel like you need to continue to educate yourself. Thank you.
All right, Trey. I'm a liberal northern pussy. And or scrotum. I always like to say scrotum. A liberal northern scrotum. Pussies are strong. They chew up semen and spit out humans. It's balls that are weak. You tap them and the person's on the floor. I'm a liberal northern ball sack. And I'm terrified of guns, even though my dad was a cop and my brother's a cop. And so I, you know, grew up in a house that had a gun in it, locked in a cabinet. But still, the caller's really mad at me. She can't decide which I should do first, educate myself or fuck myself. But she's really mad at me for something that I've said on the show that I'll say to you now. And you can, like, you're from a gun culture. Do you own a gun yourself?
Yes. Now, I have never purchased a gun, but I own multiple guns because, like many people where I'm from, I inherited my grandfather's arsenal. So... Yeah, I own guns. They're more like family heirlooms than anything else, but I do own guns. Yeah.
Okay, I had the same thing. I inherited a bunch of Catholic kitsch from my grandfather, but it can't hurt you unless it falls on you, the 7-foot Jesus in the dining room. If it falls on you, you'll die. But no guns, just a lot of crucifixes, yeah. Hymnals, and statues. But my problem with guns isn't that I think all people with guns are assholes. My dad has a gun. My brother has a gun. Not assholes. My problem is that since any asshole in this country can get their hands on a gun... For my own self-preservation, if I hear you have a gun, I have to assume, all right, dangerous asshole, until proven otherwise. I don't have it in me to say, oh, that person's a gun owner. That means they're safe, responsible. I can trust that the gun has a trigger lock on it, that it's put away, that kids in the house don't have access to it. And then they're not nuts because there's so many people who don't have trigger locks, don't put their guns away, allow kids to have access to them, and are nuts. And the cost of... giving someone the benefit of the doubt when they have guns could be your life or your kid's life. So my assumption is dangerous lunatic with a gun until proven otherwise. Does that make me an anti-gun bigot asshole who needs to fuck himself?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I get where you're coming from logically, but I mean, you know, at the same time, I don't really feel that way about it as far as, and it probably comes from having grown up, I mean, surrounded by guns everywhere my whole life and having the good fortune of never having, you know, seen that go south the way that it can. I've never seen a person get shot or any kind of gun violence related to that, luckily. Although it does happen, especially amongst us rednecks, it definitely happens. But with my life experience, I just can't be that hardcore anti-gun to that level. Now, having said that, as far as gun control measures go, the complete unwillingness of like the NRA and those people on the, you know, to the far right on that to do literally anything at all about it. I mean, that drives me insane. You know, like if I woke up tomorrow and America had banned assault rifles and we had, you know, stricter background checks and all those types of things, I would be totally fine with that. Wouldn't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, I'm not a hardcore, if you like guns, you're a lunatic person, because I know personally so many people that are all about guns, and you know, it is a little off-putting, but they're also, I wouldn't call them lunatics though at the same time. So,
my feeling about guns, and I'm sorry to bore regular listeners who've heard me say this before, but wouldn't it be great, Trey, and how do you feel about this, to live in a country where if you know somebody is a licensed gun owner, it's like knowing that they have a pilot's license. Like, wow, you can fly a plane. You trained for hours. You had, you know, all these student flights. You passed all these exams. You know how to fucking fly a plane. That's impressive that you are a pilot with a pilot license. Wow. I wish I could feel the same way about guns. Oh, you're a gun owner? That means you took all these classes. You know what you're doing. I want you around if shit goes south. You're a smart and capable person who cleared a high bar. And right now it's like, oh, you have a gun? Did you buy it on a street corner? Did you buy it at a gun show? Do you own 40 of them? Are you a psychotic nutbag who thinks that they're going to take down the federal government with an AR-15? You know, the assumptions that I make now when I hear somebody has a gun isn't, oh, good person that you want around in a crisis. It's, yeah, maybe a lunatic that you don't want living on your block, much less around in a crisis. Is that unfair of me? Am I just hopefully biased?
No, that what you said about it being analogous to having a pilot's license, yeah, I agree. That would be awesome if we could assume that. And you're right, you can't at all. And in fact, those, even if they are, even like the ones that are like fundamentally good people and they're not like crazy and they, you know, what, you know, they don't want to hurt anybody and all that, but they own guns. Most of those people, if there was like an incident happening around them, they would only make it so much worse, you know, like in their heads, they're going to save the day, you know, like, well, if I had been there in that movie theater, that never would have happened. That's what they genuinely think. But like, that's not true at all. It would have only been worse. And I've actually had like active shooter training, like in my past life, like as far as what to do when that happens. And the cops will all tell you, in like first responders, they're like, I don't care if you got a permit, I don't care what gun, I don't care where you stand on that, stay out of the way. Because like if they show up and you, it doesn't matter what side you're on, if you got a gun, they're gonna take you out. Mm-hmm. You know, like the authorities don't want these people helping, and it, but in their minds that's how they build it up. It's like they'll save the day, and literally no one wants that except like their own egos. So yeah, you know, it's, there's a fundamental disconnect with the reality surrounding guns and what these people build up in their heads, I think.
One more thing about guns before we move on to the next call. So this hunter, and you know, my husband's father was a hunter and his mother was a hunter, and we used to have a freezer full of elk when they were young and spry enough still to hunt. So we get hunters, but she's like, don't assume we're all lunatics. Don't lump all gun owners in together as like asshole lunatics, you motherfucking shitbag, is basically her response to me. And I always feel like the onus is on gun owners. If you don't want us to assume that you're all lunatics, why aren't gun owners working harder to keep guns out of the hands of lunatics? Why are gun owners supporting the NRA? Why aren't gun owners on the front lines of like wanting to raise the bar for gun ownership so that if somebody owns a gun, other gun owners aren't then smeared by association with all the shitty people who are getting their hands on guns and misusing guns?
It's just like a lot of those same people are the same ones that say about Muslims, you know, like, where are all the moderate Muslims at? Oh, they're mostly moderate. Where are they at? Why aren't they saying anything or whatever? And first of all, like, you know, of course they are, but it just doesn't get covered like a terrorist attack, because why would it?
Mm-hmm.
But the same logic applies to gun owners. Yeah. You know,
where are the moderates?
They don't do anything. Right. Where are the moderates? Where are the ones? And that's what I was saying earlier. You know, yeah, I own guns, but hey, if you want to ban assault rifles, whatever, that's fine with me. And I do think we got a problem,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, nobody else that's even remotely pro gun will say any of that ever. I mean, they literally wouldn't even pass stuff to keep terrorists or potential terrorists from being able to buy guns. Like, that's how far into the sand they've dug their heels in, you know? And like, it's just, I don't know.
And we have videos from Al-Qaeda and ISIS suggesting to wannabe jihadis to go to the United States and buy guns and commit acts of terror. And still the Republicans in Congress, in, you know, with the NRA's dicks in their mouths, can't pay, you know, look at that video and say, yeah, maybe we should not let people on the terror watch list buy AK-47s and AR-15s in this country per ISIS and Al-Qaeda's suggestions that they do. You know, the whole thing about, you know, why don't the moderates speak up? To give credit to gun owners, when you look at the polls, majorities of gun owners support the exact gun control reforms that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama push, about closing the gun show loophole, about universal background checks. But it's the NRA that speaks for gun owners, and the moderate right. gun owners who support common sense gun legislation allow that to happen. They allow the NRA to speak to them, for them, just like liberal Christians for too long allowed shitbags like Tony yes. Perkins to speak for them. Like, if you don't like those of us who, you know, are on the outside of your culture thinking you're all fucking gun fondling lunatics, speak the fuck up. Don't just yell at us and say, oh, we're not all like that. I know you're not all like that. Speak the fuck up, because the NRA claims to speak for all of you.
That reminds me of something that just like illustrates the point you're making about the NRA speaking for them and like that whole mentality. And like, I can't really explain this, but this is a direct quote. I used to work in my old job with this older veteran guy, and he's a black guy, and he's very, very pro gun. And he said to me once, his exact words were, "Trey, let me tell you something. The National Rifleman's Association is one of the most racist organizations in this entire country. Pause. And I've been a card carrying member for 35 years.
Oh my God.
Because I swear that's exactly what he said, because it's like, that's how, I don't know, important these things are to these people for whatever reason. They like genuinely believe somebody's going to come take their guns or whatever if they don't, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I can't explain it, but that's like a glimpse into the mind of somebody that's super pro gun.
Hi, Dan. I am a 52-year-old woman, recently divorced. One of the reasons why I got divorced, well, the big one, is that my husband lost all interest in me sexually. And for the last 10 to 12 years of my marriage, I had absolutely no sexual touch at all. So I'm just recently back into the dating scene. It was really hard, but I met a guy I like, and we have started, you know, having sex. But I have learned that, you know, I still work. The plumbing still works for me. Multiple orgasms, everything's great. But my technique is not all that great for him. So in particular, it's in the giving of blowjobs. And I listen to your show, so I know all about, you know, head in and rub the shaft and all the things you tell us to do. But apparently I cannot get my mouth wet enough, and I cannot get his penis wet enough that it ends up ultimately hurting. I like this guy. I'd like to do this for him, but I physically don't have enough spit in my mouth to make everything wet. And I would hate to lose him over this, but I totally get it. I mean, when you're with somebody and they're having two and three orgasms and you can't even have one, it's pretty, you know, it's going to get old fast. So any suggestions you could make for me to be able to increase my spit, I would really like that.
Okay, Trey, now we're into the nitty-gritty sex advice. She's trying to suck this guy's dick, doesn't have enough spit. What should she do?
I didn't even know that that was a thing that could happen, but I didn't know that people, you could run short on spit unless you were like literally dying. Like, maybe she's dehydrated. She should look into some Powerade or something like that. Or I think I read in a magazine once that like, if you're in the desert, I don't know why the hell this was in a magazine, but like you could put like a pebble under your tongue and it forces your mouth to produce saliva, but that's probably not true. But let's just say, let's act like it is.
Sounds like a Cosmo magazine sex tip from 20 years ago, but go for it.
Right. Yeah. But it was about, it was like a Cosmo magazine, how not to die in a desert tip. You know what I mean? That's like, I don't know why that article even existed, but I do remember reading that. And then, also I've seen this stuff you can buy that you're supposed to spray in your mouth in the morning. Like if you're a mouth breather like me, it's supposed to like, you know, you wake up a morning dry mouth, it's supposed to take care of that for you. So maybe she could get some of that and just like go way overboard with it and, you know, turn into like one of Pavlov's dogs or something, you know what I mean? Overcompensate. And that those three things about all I got as far as how to produce more saliva.
Hey, Trey Goddard, thank you so much. That was a great answer. Thank you so much. What's the name of the book? You got a book coming out October 4th. What's the name of it so people can find it?
Yeah. Got a book coming out called The Liberal Redneck Manifesto, Dragon Dixie Out of the Dark. It's from Simon & Schuster. It comes out October 4th. You can pre-order it right now and all the way up through then.
And you should pre-order it. If you haven't seen Trey Crowder's hilarious liberal redneck videos, get on the Google, get on YouTube, go watch a bunch of them. Trey, thank you so much. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, I hope I come back too. This was great. Thank you, Dan. It's been a pleasure.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 25-year-old straight cisgender male. I've been in a relationship with my girlfriend for about 5 years. And recently, she has been starting, she's expressed interest in picking up smoking. She says it's a texture thing for her. Her dad does it, so she has good memories with it. But it's something absolutely disgusting to me. We've worked out some sort of arrangement where she can have a limited amount of cigarettes within the year so that she can get it out of her system. I hope it she can get it out of her system. Being addicted to cigarettes would be a deal breaker for me. It's really frustrating, and I want to trust her. She's had problems before with not knowing her limits with alcohol. She's not an alcoholic or anything, but she has had one occasion where she got blackout drunk, and she had to have a friend walk her home. So I just want your opinion on this. It's really bothering me. It's a high contentious issue for the both of us because I feel as if I don't give her any leverage at all or anything to work with that she's going to go behind my back, and it's going to get worse just because I know how people are.
You can't be a little bit of a smoker. You're a smoker or you're not a smoker. It's just like you can't be a little bit pregnant. You're pregnant or you're not pregnant. You're a cocksucker or you're not a cocksucker. Like, you should break up with her. Because smoking is, as one of the tech savvy at-risk youth said when we talked about your call, a legit, straight up, nobody can fault you deal breaker. You don't want to kiss somebody who smokes. You don't want to be with somebody who smokes. Then you just aren't with somebody who smokes. And my God, agreeing to some number of cigarettes she is permitted by you to smoke in the course of a year to stay. How are you going to track that over the course of a year? That's just going to be a conflict generator. That's going to be impossible for you to stay on top of, impossible for you to track or count the number of cigarettes. No, this is bullshit. Just break up with her. What kind of person, what kind of idiot, whether daddy smoked or not, what kind of idiot picks up smoking in their mid-20s? That's bananas. And that speaks to, on her part, bad judgment. And who wants to be with somebody for the long, long term, if you're contemplating life partnering with this person, who wants to be with somebody over the long, long term who has such terrible fucking judgment that they would begin to smoke in their mid-20s? That seems so crazy to me that I'm sitting here thinking that maybe she's been smoking the entire time that you've been together just behind your back. That she's been smoking since she was 12 or 13, like most people who are addicted to cigarettes their entire lives were. They started young, and she hid it from you all this time, and now wants to come out of the cold and smoke in front of you or not have to sneak around worrying about when she's going to get caught. That's just me spitballing here. Even if that's not the case, even if she's just one of those rare 25 or 26-year-olds who decides that, based on everything they know about cigarettes at that stage of life, that they want to start smoking, yeah, you should dump that person. You should instantaneously and without hesitation make it clear to that person that it's you or cigarettes. And she's already chosen, it seems, cigarettes. So it's cigarettes, not you.
Hi, Dan. This is a late 20-something in the Pacific Northwest, and I have a really sort of paranoid kind of vibe question. My boyfriend's a smoker, and if he doesn't, like, brush his teeth or something, like, after he gets done smoking, and he goes down on me, should I be worried about, like, germs or anything like that? And, like, kind of along the same vein, I think about morning breath and just germs in general, like, down there.
We've all heard of secondhand smoke. That's the smoke drifting through the air in a bar or at a restaurant or on the street or in someone's living room or in their car because they smoke and there's some innocent lungs nearby that are inhaling that smoke, and it can impact that innocent pair of lungs, that person's health as well. Third-hand smoke, take it away, Mayo Clinic, generally considered to be residual nicotine and other chemicals left on a variety of indoor surfaces by tobacco smoke, creating a toxic mix. Studies show that third-hand smoke clings to hair, skin, like his lips, like his face when he's pressing it into your twat, clothes, furniture, drapes, walls, bedding, carpets, dust, vehicles, and other surfaces, even long after the smoking has stopped. The Mayo Clinic goes on, the only way to protect non-smokers like you, caller, from third-hand smoke is to create a smoke-free environment. And I think you know there's only one way for you to do that if your boyfriend is going to continue to smoke.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about episode 518, where the woman's boyfriend had this horribly disgusting habit. I just want to say that was so fucking gross. I started to retch. I finally had to fast forward to the end of that bit. And I will tell you, I've heard plenty of, you know, episodes that have to do with scat, which I also find disgusting. But for some reason, that was so much worse to me. I don't know. Anyway, Jesus, God, don't talk about that stuff again. It freaks me out.
Well, hi, Dan. This is in response to the caller in 518 who was disgusted by having someone eat eye boogers in front of him. Number one, what exactly do you think eye boogers are? It's just your eye drops that have hardened and dried. And yes, while I don't think everyone needs to see someone eating them, I don't think it's disgusting. I think it's just a habit, just like people bite their toenails or, in some case, people who eat their boogers. And guess what? I'm one of those people, but I don't do it in front of anybody else because, dear Lord knows, I don't want anyone else to see it. So yes, she should have freaked out on him about, like, you know, hey, don't do that in front of me. I don't like it. Please stop. But, like, it's not like, I don't know, he's eating his own shit, which, let me tell you, some people like that. I don't. But, you know, I think you're kind of trying to categorize it in the same category as that. So just something to think about before you go off on the rails of someone eating their eye boogers, which is really not that big of a deal. Sorry, just my two cents.
Hi, Dan. I'm actually calling to record a comment about the last episode about the PCT. I was not hiking this summer, but I was living in a town that was right on the trail, and I ended up hooking up with a lot of hikers. I can definitely see why girls get caught up. The hikers that I hooked up with were across the board the most GGG partners I have ever had. And also, I'm pretty sure I met Annie. And girl, you are way too cool to be getting jerked around like that. Leave the guy hike ahead. They were totally right. Also, I wanted to share a little term I coined for myself this summer. I started calling myself a hiker hound. A hiker hound is someone who is not hiking, but actively pursues awesome sex with through hikers.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Speaking of Twitter, Julie tweets, big thanks to at FakeDanSavage for making my workday so much better, working on designs and enthusiastically mouthing opinions to myself. You're welcome, Julie, and good luck with the designs. Catch Trey Crowder on his comedy tour. Go to wellreadcomedytour.com. That's W-E-L-L-R-E-D comedy.com. Then if you're looking for Trey online, spell his first name T-R-A-E Crowder. When you're Googling around looking for his videos, and they will all pop right up. And they are high hilarious. Check him out. HumpFilmFest.com is coming to you. Go to HumpFilmFest.com for info about the cities where Hump will be coming to come. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.